The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Hey friends, today, Chelsea. After the shock with the doc, Blues get opened up by a surgeon, Manchester City, who certainly know how to operate and keep themselves on top of the table, while Chelsea are down and look in need of assistance. But do we really understand football enough to know? And what's the football for John Terry? Off before the second half, like a Sunderland supporter. Elsewhere, there's the Gunners winning at Palace, Everton stunning Saints, and Leicester besting West Ham. We look back on match day two of the Premier League and forward to the midweek European action, those Champions League playoffs and Europa League playoffs. Will Man United get battered by Bruges? What about Celtic with Malmo? All of that and much, much more in this Football Weekly. Okay, listeners, joining us today, Philippe Auclair.
Hello, Jimbo.
Bonjour, Philippe, which kind of makes the rest of today's lineup irrelevant. But along for the ride.
Thanks, James.
Nick Miller.
Hi.
Hi. And Barry Glendinning.
Bonjour.
Oui. Ça va, Barry?
Ça va bien.
Excellent news. Item one today. Well, I've got City-Chelsea. Is that all right with you guys?
Yeah, it's all right. We learned that Barry studied ancient history at university, apparently.
Oh, really? When was this?
Very long time ago.
Right. Okay.
Ancient history. Yeah,
indeed. No, but when did you discover this?
Just a few minutes ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
More recent history.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, let's talk about more recent. A nice segue there. A more recent history, like City's, fake, according to some, but thoroughly convincing, according to others. 3-0 victory over Chelsea. A very impressive start to the season by Man City. That's back-to-back 3-0 wins. Probably the tweet of the weekend came from Dion Fanning, who says, cunning by Mourinho, get Chelsea to play badly to deflect attention from the Eva Carneiro issue. City looking terrific. Chelsea looking a little bit, if you will, like last year's City, having just won the title. Fabregas in the role of a midfielder has had too much pudding. And John Terry now the faded back four-star a la Vincent Kompany last year.
Who was terrific. It was magnificent yesterday, Vincent Kompany.
Oh, right.
I think you're a bit tough on Manchester City last season. I think they were far worse than Manchester City were for last season.
Okay.
You don't think so?
Chelsea this time are far worse than City were last time. Right. Okay. Well, it's the first time. And loads of stats about this is the first time that Chelsea have X and Y. First time they've conceded more than once in Manchester.
First time they haven't won a single game since the 1998-99 season. In the opening two games. Whether people don't say is that in 1998, 1999, they went 20 games undefeated after that. So,
right. Mm. Well, there's been with that business of John Terry subbed off for the first time by Mourinho in a Premier League match, has been a lot of people talking about this in kind of Götterdämmerung terms. You know, this is very much the twilight of the Chelsea gods and that. Is it just a blip, Barry?
Well, Jose, there's sort of various theories doing the round that it was Jose sending a message upstairs that he's needs a new centre defender. His own excuse was that he wanted to play a higher line in the second half and John Terry is too slow to facilitate that tactic. But when Kurt Zouma came on, Chelsea didn't play a particularly higher line. You know, I think according to Opta, it was only 3 metres higher in the second half than it was throughout the first. So, I don't know. Terry just didn't have a good game. And I would imagine Mourinho was absolutely furious when, after 30 seconds, the back line was breached and Aguero was through on goal, firing at Asmir Begovic. And I wouldn't say it's the end. I mean, Terry's career obviously is approaching its end.
Mm. Is this a big warning sign about Chelsea's form this season, about flaws in a side that maybe was overused by the manager last year?
It was, definitely.
But I mean, possibly. There's this thing about them starting pre-season about a week after everyone else. So they're, because after they had this post-season tour and Mourinho wanted them to have a month off in between that and pre-season. So they were basically a week behind everyone else. So obviously that means they're going to be sluggish now, but the, presumably the benefit of that will come later on in the season when they've had their proper rest.
And right. It could be one of those tortoise and hare scenarios, do you think?
Exactly.
Very much playing the role of the hare at the moment, Man City.
Yes.
How impressed were you with them, Nick?
Well, they were excellent. Most of the players who were not quite as good last season all seems to have got it together and improved at the same time. So obviously it was Kompany, and Mangala was very good yesterday.
Which it must be said that he was also excellent against Chelsea last season. It's exactly the type of attacker, which is why some people search him. Even Radamel Falcao, who is out of form, would have been a tougher proposition for Mangala than a very physical striker like Diego Costa, whom he had in his pocket last year as well. So, but also Kolarov.
Kolarov was very good. His sort of one game in about 10 where he looks excellent. So maybe he'll continue that. Who knows?
Right.
Bakary Sagna too had an excellent game. You would think Pablo Zabaleta normally would be one of the mainstays of that back four, but he was excellent. David Silva was absolutely terrific, and Aguero was magnificent. What can you say?
And what about Fernandinho doing a Diego Costa on Diego Costa?
Yeah, it was a bit naughty, wasn't he?
Well, it was, but it was a little bit in response to Diego. I mean, he started it, man. Diego Costa had previously gone well in on him.
Well, you understand why he's chosen to play for Spain now. Yeah. Honestly, he's obviously not very much well-liked. But I find a bit... People say it's a red card, definitely. I wasn't too sure about that.
I thought it was.
Well, maybe it was. Wait.
Oh. Well, had he been sent off and had Remy's goal stood, which it shouldn't, but it was pretty tight, wasn't it? Ramirez's goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which correctly flagged offside. I'm just thinking about the wonderful match commentary on Chelsea's website, which basically explains how...
I'm not sure what game you saw, because according to the report I read, this was a game of very fine margins.
Yeah, indeed.
And Chelsea were absolutely robbed by Martin Atkinson.
All right. Do you think, though, come April, we'll be looking back on this as a significant match, or will we be thinking, crikey, back then it looked like Chelsea weren't at the races, but my word, how they proved us wrong?
Well, it's only speculation, but I don't think they will. I mean, obviously they're going to improve, because it's difficult to see them getting much worse. And they have looked sluggish and off the pace, and they will get fitter. But I just think they haven't reinforced the squad, and it's very important to do that. Mm. Teams behind them have brought in new recruits, and I don't think Chelsea will win the league.
It would be very interesting to see what he's going to do with Branislav Ivanovic, because now it's like everybody's got his number, everybody knows you attack on that side of the pitch, which means that Mourinho is obliged to have somebody like Ramirez trying to counter the pressure on Ivanovic, who is really behind the pace now, and it has been for months, and is knackered. And so you could think, with the arrival of Baba Rahman, perhaps is Azpilicueta moving to the right side, which is natural side, Rahman fitting in at left back, and Ivanovic being a possible, it could be used as a central defender, which is something in a position in which he excels. So it's very difficult to see what it's going to shape up like this thing. But if it's still the same squad, without reinforcing it, absolutely no chance.
Right. Do we think Jose Mourinho will still be the manager come season's end?
The third.
Well, I mean, I suggested a couple of weeks ago at Football Weekly Live that I didn't think he'd be there at the end of the season. This was before any of the...
It's quite spooky, Barry, actually.
Medical controversy. And then there was a sort of sharp intake of breath and some tittering at my foolishness. Mm. But I can see him leaving.
Do you think he'll leave, or he'll get sacked? Do you think he'll just burst or something?
Any of those is possible.
On the touchline, just spontaneously combusts.
He could spontaneously combust. He could just explode.
Or he could bounce back and make a fool of our predictions, the way that Arsenal, say, did this weekend when they went to Selhurst Park and got yet another 2-1 victory. That was more like it. What was the difference for the Gunners?
They turned up.
Right. Was it Sanchez?
Yes, made a big difference. Tactical reshaping of the team, perhaps, as well, which is going back to what worked so well last season with Coquelin and Santi Cazorla.
Right.
As a kind of double pivot, and Cazorla in this deep-lying playmaker role, which he likes a lot. And certainly Alexis makes a huge difference. I mean, in the way he started the game for somebody who's basically you know, come back from holidays, if he had a holiday, is quite astonishing. And great resilience, and perhaps as well the type of opposition, and that suited them better, because Crystal Palace had a right go.
Right. Well, they did, didn't they?
They were terrific.
But basically, Arsenal played with width.
Bit more width, even if they could have more width, if he played as he did in the at the end of the game, Oxlade-Chamberlain on the right rather than Aaron Ramsey. But yes, there was width, and there was genuine desire to go through the channels and look for Olivier Giroud, which worked quite spectacularly. I mean, they had a little bit of luck, but they held on quite convincingly in the end. I mean, Crystal Palace is not going to be a nice place to go for any team this season.
No, well, I was of the opinion that, because you know, it wasn't a nice follow-up match for Arsenal, because Selhurst Park is such a bear pit. But on the radio yesterday, we had Danny Murphy on, and I made this point to him, and he said that while a fair assessment about Crystal Palace support, the pitch there is actually very big, and he thought that would play into Arsenal's hands.
Oh.
And he made the point that Crystal Palace, many of their good results come away from home.
Yeah, they have a better record. Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought also yesterday Mesut Ozil was terrific.
Yeah, 54 of 55 passes completed, 37 of 38 of them, or 37 or 38 in Palace's final third. Wow, lovely numbers. Why do you think that was?
He likes that team. He was also absolutely fantastic last year against Palace. I mean, it seems that Giroud and Ozil like going there. And Giroud has scored in these last three games.
Oh, what a goal by Giroud as well.
Yeah,
have that, critics.
He's a striker that's going to fire them to the title now.
Is that right, Nick?
No.
Okay. Good timing of the week. The award for that goes to whoever flew that plane... saying Kenwright and Co. Time to go over St Mary's just before Everton absolutely stormed it against Saints. Wow.
It was a weird game, because I didn't think Southampton were that bad. They were very toothless up front, and yet came out on the wrong end of a 3-0 hiding, despite dominating in the early stages. There was quite clearly a big, massive Morgan Schneiderlin shaped hole in their midfield.
Also the fullbacks, something that's been picked up on, the way that maybe Everton were allowed to sprint downfield because they don't have the Klein and Bertrand combination anymore at Saints.
Yeah, but, well, there could be something to that too. I mean, for the second game in a row, Southampton conceded a goal from one of their own corners, which is not good. You know, they got caught in the break repeatedly. And Romelu Lukaku showed, you know, he was back as the Romelu Lukaku who we were all raving about when he was playing for West Brom. He had a quiet season last year, but that he was back to his best. He was virtually unplayable on Saturday.
That second goal was fantastic, because he, I forget who, was it Ross Barkley who passed it to him?
Yeah.
Lukaku was running at full pelt, and the pass was very slightly behind him, so he had to kind of really readjust his feet on the edge of the area while he was running very quickly, and then obviously hitting it right to the corner. It was excellent. And the other goal was very good as well.
Yeah.
They were just very clinical, Everton.
And he had a spectacular strike before the game as well, when he blasted ball into the face of a lady spectator, and then very kindly ran up the steps of the stand to give her a big hug by way of apology, which was a nice touch.
A lovely gesture. People do say he's one of the nicest and sharpest young men in football. Speaks 13 or 14 languages, I understand. Romelin, I hope, is one of them.
Who'd win between him and Patrick Bamford in a...
in a niceness?
Well, a niceness and a brightness.
Oh,
off.
Is Patrick Bamford... is he...
Well, there was an interview with him in The Observer. He speaks, I think, 5 different languages. He's also the son of the... I think he's the son of the Bamfords that own the JCB empire.
Right.
And he turned down a place at Harvard to play football.
Is that right?
He went to a very posh school near where I grew up, Patrick Bamford, the high school in Nottingham. He's a very well brought up young man.
Right. Well, there you go. There you go.
Did you go and sort of bully them for being posh boys?
Yep.
You were the local muggles.
We pushed them into puddles and stuff like that.
All right.
Ruined their nice brogues.
What was their collective name?
don't think they had a collective name.
All right.
They
were just... Where I went to school, it was Rodneys and Crombies.
Which was which?
Well, we were very much the Rodneys, and they were the Crombies. And if you're listening in the Crowthorne area, big shout out to you.
Which side were you on? Were you the street thugs or were you the posh kids?
I think you know me well enough, Nick, to know that I ran a little bit counter this whole kind of Jets and Sharks dynamic. Mm. I was out there just trying to bring a little bit of love and peace to the streets.
You straddled both sides.
Yeah. I kept it real.
Where I went, it was College Boys and Rozzers.
Rozzers?
Yeah, right. They were the local riffraff.
Right. Well, luckily not a problem we have here at King's Cross. And you know, don't have that because we're in near Earth orbit, of course, aren't we? Hey, listeners. Oh, right. Anyway, that was Southampton Everton.
Just one thing about that. Football fans tend to be delusional. I mean, we are all delusional. But when it comes to Everton fans, I was listening to some of them, you know, screaming on the airwaves over the past few weeks, and I should say the past few months. And I still don't understand what they want, because they want Ken Wright out, basically. And they want somebody to come in and just lose a lot of money on the club, and then they'll be happy.
Hmm.
Well, that's basically it, isn't it? I mean, I misunderstood something.
It's important.
So we
want
our club to be badly run. It's well run at the moment.
It's important to differentiate between the Everton fans who hired the plane and other Everton fans. A lot of Everton fans think those people who hired the plane to fly over St. Mary's are idiots.
Yeah.
Now, their argument, the people who hired the plane, they say that Ken Wright gives the public impression is that Everton is a well-run club, but behind the scenes, it's not so well-run.
Mm-hmm.
They argue that the scheme, neither Ken Wright nor any of the board members have actually put any of their own money into the club. They've sold off loads of assets, and that's what funds the enterprise. And now all those assets are gone. There's no money left, and that I think what their net spend over summer was something. Oh, 4 million.
Right.
But now I don't know who's right.
And why not?
My impression is that Ken Wright.
What I don't understand is why not? Why not live with the money you've got? Why should you expect every club to have a sugar daddy? Do they want an Abramovich? Should they ask Usmanov if he wants to sell his Arsenal shares and buy Everton instead or something like that?
I don't know. My impression, personal impression, is that Ken Wright is a good owner who has the best interests of the club at heart. But again, they will argue that that's just a PR spin and I've been gulled by that. I don't know enough about the situation to know who's right.
Hmm. But they did get a bit of a scare last season, and given that their approach to this season seemed to be, let's try what we did last season again and see if it works any better this time. I can understand why there might have been a bit of panic among the supporters.
I think they've approached one of the big problems they had, which was the lack of creativity in midfield last season. I think the return of Deulofeu is going to make a huge difference.
Ross Barkley was superb.
Exactly. So, we shall see.
Listen, Saints then, beaten at home. Quite an upset that for the home fans. Next up, Thursday indeed, a Europa League playoff for them. They're going to be taking on the exciting Danish side, Midtjylland, winners of the Danish Superliga, of course, owned by Matthew Benham of Moneyball Brentford.
Yeah, well, it's well documented that they're so scientific, they don't actually have players on their team. It's just hovering red discs over the pitch, which are moved by remote control from the dugout.
Oh, well, I'm looking
forward to seeing that.
Not an approach that paid off in their last game. They went out of a previous Champions League playoff this season to Apple Nicosia, while Saints sailed past Vitesse 5-0 on aggregate. So presumably Southampton rated very much the favourites for this, although we'll see how the red discs of Midtjylland do on Thursday. Also in Europe, Man United, who Tuesday night will be hosting Club Brugge. Very, very shortly, we're going to be talking to Nick about how Man United fared away at Aston Villa on Friday. And the prospects for the Belgian side will be taking a leaf out of... What was Tom Cruise's character in Magnolia called? But anyway, we'll be talking to de Kock as we dial up Bjorn de Kock of the top Belgian website, benefit.net.
Producer Ben here, listeners, reminding you that the Football Weekly Roadshow is headed your way. We'll be in the Northwest in September for a night of ungodly football frolics at Manchester Cathedral. That's part of the Manchester Football Writing Festival. And then in October, we're headed to the seaside and a Friday night spot at the Brighton Comedy Festival. Badum and indeed Tish. We'll be announcing more dates and more destinations on our UK tour soon. For more information on all of the Football Weekly live events and to book your tickets, head to theguardian.com/guardianlive.
All right, well now, Man United off on their European adventures once again. Friday, we saw them take the field at Aston Villa, where they got a 1-0 win. Most of the reports I saw, Nick, dominated by discussions about Wayne Rooney and how dismal he was and how he poses no threat, didn't have any touches inside the penalty area until the 93rd minute, hasn't had a game in which he's had more than one shot on target since February of this year and is generally a bit bobbins. What was your take? Does any of this matter if you're getting back-to-back 1-0 wins?
Well, I think the Rooney thing does matter in that they haven't really got anyone else. They have Javier Hernandez, who Van Gaal clearly doesn't rate that highly because he sent him out on loan last season. And who else have they got? James Wilson, who is, how old is he, 19? And still not proven yet. I mean, it really was terrible, and this is what he does. When he's good, he's, you know, one of the best strikers in the division, in Europe, wherever, but when he's bad, he's absolutely catastrophically bad. He's a liability. He's got the, you know, first touch of a traffic bollard, and he actively harms the team rather than just being a passenger. And that's what he played like on Friday. But they were very solid. Mm. Other than that, they didn't look particularly good. I think they'll be very good at shutting games out this season. Like, particularly after about an hour, Van Gaal brought on Schweinsteiger and Herrera, and that was kind of it. They shut everything down, and Schweinsteiger kind of took control, and that's, you know, that's probably part of the reason why they've managed to get these two tight 1-0 wins.
Because you mentioned potential other forwards, Marouane Fellaini, when he comes back from suspension.
Of course, how can I forget?
Deploy the Fellaini. Philippe, does it look like you wanted to add something to this?
No, absolutely no.
Fine. In which case,
it just looks keen. Constantly.
In which case, let's look forward then to Tuesday night's clash at Old Trafford as Club Brugge arrive in town to find out a little bit more about what kind of a threat they might be posing. Let's now dial up our friend Bjorn de Kock of Benefoot.net. Bjorn, thank you so much for joining us. What can you tell us about this team? First of all, how big a threat does it pose to Van Gaal's United?
Well, to be honest, this should be quite an easy game for Manchester United. But you never know this early in, you know, at the season. It's always difficult. You know, as well as Manchester United doesn't have their starting 11. It's the same with Club Brugge. But the biggest concern with Club Brugge is that they miss a lot of key players. They have 7 injured players, and 5 of them are really very important for them. We only play 3 games here in the competition. And so we're all looking a bit... So Michel Prudhomme is really looking at his starting 11, and he just has to wait until his players are coming back from their injury. And now he just has, it's a big puzzle for him. So even for us, it's very difficult to say which will be the starting 11 against Manchester United.
Right. You mentioned Michel Prudhomme, who's probably the most recognisable name for a lot of English football fans. David Platt's goal in Italia 19 and all that. But anyway, legendary Belgian keeper, now very successful manager. In terms of the team, all those players out, have they got the big target fella Tom De Sutter?
Yeah, and I think we all think he will probably play. Even he will, you know, his transfer to Bursaspor is almost finished. So he will, you know, it's 99% sure that he will leave to Turkey. But yeah, Tom De Sutter is the only experienced striker in the team. We also have Obi Olari, but that's a very young, talented striker. But he showed, you know, the last weeks he showed that he isn't, you know, really ready for it yet. He had a lot of concerns by agents trying to sign him and stuff like that. So Michel Prudhomme has to keep his head cool again and stuff like that. So he will probably play with Tom De Sutter, I think.
All right. They got to the quarterfinals of the Europa League last year, no, Brugge?
Yeah, they had a very good season last year. They almost won the competition. Also, they lost the competition in the last 10 games because you probably already know here in Belgium it's a kind of playoff system and it's really strange. So first you have to play 30 games, and then it's a final 10 games against the 6 best teams of the competition. And they lost the competition over there because they played a lot of games in Europe. I think Club Brugge was the team with the most games in Europe last season.
Bjorn, is that the way the Jupiler League is played every year? I was looking at it today. It seems a remarkably convoluted way of going about things.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's like this for a couple of years, and almost everybody was against it, but it still went on. So and it will go on like this for the next years. So we're used to it now, but it's still strange for other countries, and nobody understands why we're doing it like this.
Is there a lot of excitement about this game in Belgium? Would it mean a huge amount, or to actually qualify and knock Man United out of the playoffs? Or are people kind of riding it off a little bit?
Yeah. In Belgium, everybody already knows that Club Brugge will probably lose against Manchester United. But everybody is so excited because for a Belgian team, it's so nice to draw a team like Manchester United. You know, we prefer to draw a team like Manchester United than, for example, Shakhtar Donetsk. You know, so because it's you know, all everybody is up to it. You know, we can't wait until the game starts.
Bjorn, has everyone in Belgium actually seen Manchester United play this season? They've won both their games, but they haven't looked particularly impressive. It could be argued they're there for the taking.
Yeah, maybe. Certainly this early in the season, but yeah, individually, the quality, the difference is too big, I think. The gap is too big, and you know, we all know their players very well, and also players like Memphis Depay, those, you know, Januzaj, those are players who would be the best here in Belgium.
All right, then. Bjorn, listen, thank you so much for that preview anyway, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Top Belgian knowledge there, Barry. Because it's normally Scottish football's more of your thing, which is why I was hoping you might tell us a little bit more about the prospects for Celtic when they take on Swedish side Malmö in Wednesday, again, in the Champions League playoffs. I can tee you up by mentioning how Celtic only just got past Karabakh of Azerbaijan, 1-0 on aggregate. Malmö, meanwhile, steamed past Red Bull Salzburg of 5-0. Oh, you recall that they knocked out Alimakos Rangers from the Champions League in 2011. Ooh, they hammered Hibs 9-0 on aggregate in the Europa League qualifiers 2 years later. That's 2013. So, and Celtic, I mean, this was the point when it all went wrong for them last year. They took on Maribor in the Champions League playoffs. And do you remember there was that business with the... they only just got into this point because they had their opposition had an ineligible player. And then they crashed out against Maribor anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of Celtic fans I know who they're certainly not confident by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not going to pretend I know a great deal about Malmö.
Sixth in the league at the moment.
But I would imagine there's probably not a great deal of difference between the standard in Scotland and Sweden. I know that Celtic's assistant manager...
Oh, Philippe wants to come in on the...
No, I would say, I would argue that the Swedish top division is slightly stronger
than the
Scottish one, yes.
Really, there you go.
Right. Mm. John Collins has, as I said before, in Feedback Corner, been heavily criticised for saying that the poor quality of opposition Celtic face in Scotland is damaging their chances of progressing in Europe because they're not getting tested enough week in, week out. And, yeah, I'd say it'd be pretty nip and tuck, this one. If I had to have a bet on it, which I won't, I'd probably go for Celtic to go through, but not with any huge amount of confidence.
Really? Interesting. They've both got Norwegian coaches. How about that? Elsewhere in Champions League playoff land, are you excited about Valencia-Monaco? That looks like a tough game for Monaco.
Yeah, not ideal.
Mourinho's out. Yeah, Kurzawa might be missing as well.
Well, yes, there's lots of talk about Kurzawa going this way, that
Paris
way.
Paris Saint-Germain?
Yeah, well, Paris PSG, yes, but also a Premier League club.
Ooh,
but
right.
PSG seemingly being ahead. On the other hand, when you talk to Monaco fans, they're...
Confident. Where have they been hiding?
Well, no, it's an odd thing, is that Monaco doesn't have necessarily a big fan base in Monaco, because obviously, you know, the people who live in Monaco don't give a hoot about football, apart from the prince. But outside, When you see them play away, they do have quite a sizable contingent of supporters. So think of when they came to the Emirates, you know, there were thousands of them there, who are dotted a bit all over France because they remember the great, some of them, the older generation would be the great Monaco side of the early 60s. And then afterwards, of course, the sides of Arsène Wenger, Jean Tigana, and so forth. So, no,
Monegasque diaspora.
I think Monaco, I had to go over there before the Tour de France to do an interview with Chris Froome.
Oh, yeah.
And a few hours to kill.
Is he living in Monaco now?
Yes. Lots of cyclists live in Monaco. Even not, you know, cyclists who you think probably aren't remunerated well enough to be able to afford to live in Monaco. But then I suppose they're not paying tax. So. But anyway, I had a few hours to kill, so I said I'd go and have a look at this stadium. But it's, I think it's the only football stadium I've ever walked past and missed. I'm sure it's around here somewhere, and then realised I'd actually walked past it and not noticed it, which is quite an achievement for a football stadium.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks like just a block of luxury apartments or something from the
Stade
outside.
Louis II. They've not had the best of starts to the season, have Monaco. Valencia are a very exciting side these days with all that Peter Lim money. They spent, was it 100 million euros on transfers?
Monaco haven't started fantastically well, but right. It's a decent start. I mean, you know, one at Nice, which is
an
important one, right. For example.
Yeah.
The Riviera Derby.
Okay. Should have done research. Okay. And Valencia, well, they might be losing Otamendi, of course.
That is what everybody says. Yes.
Okay.
The news today is that Otamendi is going to City, and yes, Mangala will go the other way on loan, which seems slightly odd. But I think the reason Otamendi is going to City is because they still owe Valencia, haven't paid them for
Negredo,
so they're going to throw Otamendi instead.
Anyway, listeners are desperate to hear more about other Champions League playoffs, so let me throw a Sporting CSKA Moscow. That's on Tuesday. That's quite exciting. It's a repeat, of course, of the 2005 UEFA Cup final. Rapid Vienna take on Ajax Amsterdam. Lazio, Bayer Leverkusen. Ooh, dear.
Ooh, dear.
Ooh, dear for Lazio.
Ooh, dear for Bayer Leverkusen, maybe.
Why?
I don't know. I thought Lazio had a... No?
Well, Lazio looked sparkling last year, but they haven't really got their mojo back so far. They've only played one game so far, which was
the
Super Cup.
It's the old thing that, you know, with the Serie A clubs, that they start so late that they're never quite in the right frame of
Other problems for them include the fact that Miroslav Klose is now, I think, 37, but he might even be 38.
Mm.
And he's looking really, really slow in their pre-season games. They've got their goalkeeper, Marchetti, out with broken ribs. Italian clubs, because of this... starting their season late business. Possibly that's the reason. But they have a terrible record in these playoffs. We've seen them again and again. Udinese, Sampdoria, they always seem to struggle at this point. Napoli, of course, last year against Athletic Bilbao. Should we have a quick word about, in fact, the Bundesliga and the Liga? Liga up in the second week. Bundesliga started off with... Bayern picked up where they left off. They beat Hamburg 5-0. And the new men in there look brilliant. Vidal, who's coming from Juventus, particularly Douglas Costa, who's taking up a position wide and putting an absolutely extraordinary assist for one of the goals. Anyway, they look brilliant.
How many Germans are left in the Bayern team these days?
Ask me questions, Philippe. I don't know. Probably lots.
No, precisely.
Surely the most important question is, will there be a challenge to Bayern this year? And maybe, just maybe, Borussia Dortmund might be back providing one, because they've not done a huge amount in terms of transfers. What they have done is brought in Thomas Tuchel, or Mr. Tuchel, as I like to call him. and he started off with a terrific 4-0 win over the other Borussia side, Mönchengladbach. It's exciting, isn't it?
I think I heard somewhere, is it Bayern Munich are 10-1 on to win the Bundesliga?
Yes, so it's correct.
You put £10 on, you get one back.
Yeah,
is that right?
That has to be a great investment. I mean, a 10% return on your money over, 9 months?
Mm-hmm.
If you've
spare
10 grand or 100 grand knocking around, that surely you're basically betting that they're not going to have some terrible accident and all be killed.
Right.
This is how we were talking about that professional gambler who is now destitute. This is how this is the kind of thing that happens to those people. You put these huge amounts of money on, and then something goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Right. What are the odds on PSG retaining the French title for a fourth straight year?
Double them up.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know, 1 to 25, 1 to 50. I don't know what the odds
are. Last year...
Maybe they're not taking bets anymore on
probably
PSG.
Probably not.
No. You could do a Celtic PSG Bayern Munich treble.
Right. You might want to throw Juventus in there. Although, we'll talk more about this on Thursday when James Oldcastle's in. Roma have spent some very interesting money on some very interesting players. And they might provide more of a challenge, especially with all the players that have gone out of Juve. But on the subject of PSG... They're already top of the table. Last year, they didn't get into first place until April, what with the various excellent starts from Marseille, Lyon, etc. This time around, there they are. They're already 2 points clear.
Yeah, and they were... Marco, I mean, they looked like they were in pre-season against Ajaccio, really, but they just...
Yeah. Well, let's be frank. They were taking on not just Ajaccio, but the second team because of Ajaccio.
So it's a nice story, but it's a nice story that will probably end badly.
Badly,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, by the way, there were only three Germans in the Bayern Munich 11. I checked.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Four. Sorry, Conti Neuer.
All right. So, pretty speak. If you can just insert this, there were only four. Philippe. Funny you should ask me that. If you could just put that in earlier, that would be fine. Anyway, now, in other news... Oh, yeah, now, we're speaking about Ligue 1. We've got to talk about Marseille,
yeah,
Philippe.
What? But the Dickens is happening.
So the season starts. They lose at home to Caen.
Yes.
And then...
A bit unlucky to lose against Caen.
Oh, really? But anyway, then Bielsa finishes his press conference by saying, so we lost. Oh, by the way, I'm now leaving. Good
exactly.
Luck.
And so he does.
And then they lose
publishing
again.
An open letter in which he gives the reasons.
And what did he say?
Well, basically that he doesn't feel that the current management is willing to work with him and to give him the means to do anything. It's basically, it's a complete nonsensical organization.
You think it's nonsensical? Oh, it's a nonsensical organization.
Yes.
They sold off all his players, the IUs, the Payets,
They lost Gignac, who was...
And he's gone to Mexico.
Gone to Mexico where he scored a hat-trick this weekend.
But in Mexico?
The Liga MX is a very, very serious league. I
he's
mean, it's
be
actually
huge.
One of
though, by the end of the season, isn't he?
Well, he's going to have fantastic stats, that's for sure.
No, but I mean, he's physically going to be very, very large.
Tortillas and so, forth.
He's a big bone chap. Anyway,
he's a big bone chap.
It's an unusual choice. You must have been surprised when he went there.
Yeah, but I don't think it's a ridiculous choice at all.
Okay. All right.
They've lost André Ayew, of course, and we can all see how good he is.
Dimitri
Payet, who perhaps is not quite in the same class as Ayew, but has had a very good...
Tauvin could be on his way soon.
Tauvin could be on his way soon, but if I were the Newcastle fans who are asking about Tauvin, I wouldn't look at Tauvin's performance against Reims. He was absolutely appalling. It's an extraordinary situation.
Now, who's going to take over then? Who's going to step into this?
In this mess, I haven't got a clue. I'll be absolutely honest with you.
Well, they were talking about... they had previously spoken about the likes of... Klopp and even I think Ancelotti, but none of that's come to us. Latest reports have a quartet of Italian managers currently out of work. Italian managers
Spalletti.
Like Spalletti, Montella, Mazzari, most worryingly, and Prandelli.
I mean, to give you an idea of what the kind of team you're Italian, if it is an Italian, we'll find. I mean, Romain Alessandrini, who actually played, and actually was not the worst of the Marseillais, I think talked to our friends Canal Plus and said something like... if we have a manager who needs an interpreter, so okay, thank you very much. You better speak French. Yes.
Well, is there a French candidate? What about Jose Anigo? Can't he step in like last time?
Anigo?
Yeah.
In a bulletproof car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a connected figure, Nick.
Yes.
He's previously done time for having the wrong kind of friends. Is that right?
Attempted
murder or something?
No.
His son got killed, didn't
his
he?
His son got killed, was executed in a hit last year.
Right.
Last year. And he has a big house above Marseille, and it is genuinely all bulletproof.
Right.
And one of his best mates is one of the most famous gangsters in Marseille.
Right.
And he's been, I mean, there have been rumours, and they're more than rumours, let's be honest, around Jose Anigo for a very long time. And he's, I think, quite emblematic of what is right and what is wrong with this club, because he was a player, and he was an important player in that club when they rose again.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been a very important figure as a sports director, manager, assistant manager, whatever. But at the same time, he represents all that is wrong with Marseille and the reason why it's impossible to sell that club to anybody. And why Margarita, Dreyfus has a big problem on her hands because she doesn't want to lose any more money with that club.
Mm.
So they're selling their best assets.
Okay, a quick bit of music. And then we'll be back with more from that Premier League. Dum, dum, dum.
Could maybe have just have added.
This just in.
No,
French chat.
Just to add one thing is that Spurs fans are wondering what they're getting with Clinton Ngie.
Ah, yeah.
And you've seen him play. I think we'll agree that he's a very decent acquisition. It's a very, very promising young player.
But if you were going to buy a player, especially with the kind
expensive
of gaps in the Spurs lineup, if you were going to buy a player from Lyon, I don't think it would be Ngie.
I mean, there's one player you would want to buy is Fekir. But
or Lacazette, no?
I think Fekir is better than Lacazette.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I have my doubts about Lacazette.
Fekir is the creator and Lacazette's the finisher.
Fekir is the wonderful creator with the silky touch and an absolutely wonderful player.
Okay, and Ngie is what? The pacey wide man?
Pacey wide player, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, thanks for that. You bring us on to Spurs nicely, who took on Stoke at White Hart Lane on Saturday. Usual problems at home. They were 2-0 up. And it went to 2-2. The turning point here, Stephen Ireland coming on, was that the key?
Well, he certainly had a big impact. It was an interesting exchange after the game where it was mentioned in the talking points today. I can't remember who covered it first, but it was probably David Heitner. That Mark Hughes sort of went out of his way to praise Stephen Ireland and said, you know, he doesn't get a lot of opportunities under me, but I do rate him.
Mm.
And, you know, Stephen Ireland's obviously one of these players who's very much needs an arm around the shoulder and needs to be told he's loved and all that, as his defection from the Ireland squad has shown. But, he played very well when he came on, but it's difficult to see where he's going to get in, nail down a starting place in this Stoke City squad, especially now that Shaqiri has arrived.
Right.
But Ireland strikes me as one of those players who's probably happy enough just to be a bit part player, because
it's a shame though. You'd like to see more of him. He's only 28.
I know, and when he's a very good player, but he's quite a complex individual, you know. And he strikes me as perhaps one of these guys who's maybe not that interested in football, despite being really good at it, you know. I could be completely wrong, but
I always think of pink rims when I on a Range Rover.
Mm.
Spurs, meantime, are we just Harry Kane to their name now? Who else have they got
as a striker?
Yeah,
Adebayor's technically still there.
Did he not get given a squad number?
Well, he certainly wasn't on the bench at all on Saturday. They brought Lamella on for Kane to play as a striker, which didn't work out too well. Pochettino said after the game that they will be bringing in a striker or two.
Right. I think so. Charlie Austin's still out there, of course. Right. Well, anyway, that was Spurs. Watford and West Brom, they had a 0-0. In other news, Swansea and Leicester continue to look awesome. Swansea at home to Newcastle. My word, that whole kind of IU, Gomis and Montero
frightening
thing.
Isn't it?
Ooh.
Don't forget Sigurdsson in there.
Sigurdsson.
it's a very... Actually, you look at the team, you think, okay, that Jonjo Shelvey with Jack Cork, who is an excellent player, very underrated. Then you look at the four in front, you think, actually, this looks really serious. And you were talking about Tottenham.
Yeah.
What price Swansea finishing above Tottenham this season?
Wow, yeah. That's a good point. Also, very impressive, Leicester. They're for real, the Foxes.
Mm-hmm. Riyad Mahrez, eh?
Riyad Mahrez. He smells... He smells his way around the box, says the ever delightful Claudio Ranieri. Yeah. He scored 5 goals in his last 5. I don't know what Ranieri meant by that. I think I do. But anyway, and it was something nice. He meant it in a positive way. And he has scored 5 goals in his last 5 Premier League appearances. And my word. Although West Ham did come back into this, didn't they, with Payet. And they maybe should have had a penalty. Yeah? What do you think? No one's really that bothered. Reece Oxford, last week's big story, he went off at half time.
Yeah, Reece Oxford's rubbish now.
Yeah.
He's terrible.
Really?
Yeah, write him off.
Ooh! In a world of surprises, Barry, thank goodness for Sunderland. You know where you are with Sunderland, eh?
Well, I'll tell you something. Someone, and I'm sorry I can't remember his name, I think he's over in the States, he tweeted me, he made the quite astute point that every single, and he did make this point before Chelsea played and demonstrated their awfulness, that pretty much every team in the Premier League seems to be quite good, apart from one. And he didn't name the team in question, but I think we all know who he was talking about. And they truly are abominably bad. It's like Dick Advocaat sort of just went out to the stand with 11 jerseys before the game and threw them out to various, right, you're playing.
I'd be lucky to find 11 people there to receive them. The way
Well, that's the thing. They have 41,000 fans who've just been served a
Right. Constant. And what was the figure at the end? I mean, it's a genuine question.
Because
it looked like at least half the stadium had left at half time.
Now, I don't think they all left at half time. I think they left early to go and get their drinks.
Oh.
Much needed drinks.
Right, okay. My mistake.
Then came back and then left early.
And then left again. They conceded 7 goals in their opening 2 league games. Dick Advocaat described their performance in the first game as scary. This time around, he said he was stunned. Lee Catamol, with a kind of 1,000-yard stare post-game, saying, there's nothing there. It looks... I'm not quite sure. Shane Connaughton tweeting and saying, has the term made for each other ever been more appropriate than for Jonas Kabul and Sunderland?
Well, I mean, we need to get Wilson in to talk about it. He knows better than me what's going on. But by all accounts, there's a drinking culture at the club. The players are far too complacent. They don't seem to care.
Yeah, that Redmond goal, no? The way that he... I mean, great, great player in that, but it just looked unbelievably easy.
Yeah. I mean, we were saying before, while you were out fighting with the printer, I think...
I won, by the way.
They are individually good footballers, you know, but collectively they're an absolute mess. Mm. So, and they have the 8th highest wage bill in the Premier League.
No.
Yeah. With the greatest respect to... Leicester and Norwich.
Yep.
I genuinely worried what will happen to the Sunderland when they face a very good team, and Swansea are a very good team.
Mm.
It's
and they're about to lose Defoe as well, don't they?
Yeah, there's talk linking Defoe with a return to Bournemouth. Apparently he's not happy in Sunderland, he wants to go.
See, I didn't actually know that he played. Did he play there previously?
Yeah, he did on loan when he was at West Ham.
Okay.
And scored a lot of goals.
Oh.
What was his record, Nick?
We scored in 10 consecutive games, which I'm not sure whether it's still the record, but it certainly was a Football League record at the time.
Kind of thing you should know about, really.
19 in 26, something like that.
What year was this then?
2001.
The one bright spark, very sort of smouldering ember, I suppose, for Sunderland was Duncan Watmore, who's this young lad that Jonathan Wilson's been raving about for years. Finally got a chance and he scored a goal. But it's quite interesting because what was left of the crowd by the time he came on, they were booing. They turned on the chairman for the first time. They've never done that before, Ellis Short. And they were booing the performances of all the rest of their players. But whenever Watmore got on the ball, he was cheered to the rafters.
Oh.
And he scored a goal. So good for him.
Excellent. Well, we'll be looking forward to the delights of Sunderland against Swansea from the third round of the Premier League matches in Thursday's edition of Football Weekly. One will be joined by James Horncastle, who'll be helping us look forward as well to the opening round of Serie A action, which features a sizzling Fiorentina Milan clash. Milan are back, it says. We'll be finding out, I guess, for real this weekend. In the meantime, it's many, many thanks to Nick Miller, to Philippe Auclair, to Barry Glendening, and guest producer Pete, who's in for Ben, who's on his holidays. Listeners, thanks for being with us. We'll see you Thursday.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.